It doesn't sound like anything in her discography. It doesn't match. Like, if you just played it, you might guess that it's after Hounds of Love, but it could be before. But it also doesn't sound like anything on either album. It's the poppiest thing she's ever written, that's for sure. Part of it was because of its uniqueness, but also just like, it's a straight pop song with Kate. Because remember I talked about like the ninth wave, that I can't listen to songs out of the ninth wave. If I want to listen to a song in the ninth wave, I just listen to the ninth wave. And most of her songs are like that. Like, I don't play them over and over. Be Kind to My Mistakes is the first song that I put on repeat like 5 and 6 times. Like, I just can't get enough of it. Like, I just am in love with that song. I always have been since I first heard it.
Welcome to Strange Phenomena, the music of Kate Bush. I am Cecily Link, and this week we're going to be talking about a soundtrack song. Ooh, also a soundtrack song. This is from a movie that came out in the UK in 1986 and then had a US release a year later in 1987. It was a movie that starred Oliver Reed and Amanda Donahoe, and our lovely Kate Bush did the song for the soundtrack, and this plays over the beginning credits. We're talking about Be Kind to My Mistakes. Our guest this week is none other than longtime Kate fan Daniel Thomas. Daniel Thomas has contributed quite a bit to the show. He was last on the show to talk about Waking the Witch. He also wrote some essays comparing the songs from The First Side of the Dreaming to songs from Boys for Pele from Tori Amos in The Dreaming Season. And he was also, I think the first time he was on was way back in season 2, talking about Symphony in Blue. Well, this week he's going to be talking about his favorite Kate Bush song, which is Be Kind to My Mistakes. So I first heard of Daniel Thomas on a different podcast where he cited this as his favorite Kate Bush song. And so naturally, when I hear these things, I kind of like, ooh, who are you? Would you like to be on the show? But also more than that, then he cited this as his favorite Kate Bush song, because I don't, at least the impression I have, I could be wrong, that Be Kind to My Mistakes is not a song that I see a lot of discussion about, which is really too bad, because I can tell you this was one of the first Kate Bush songs that I listened to that went, oh my gosh, I love it. Just the 80s-ness of it. I love it. And also the song is just really good as well. So I got to talk with Daniel Thomas this week, and I'm just super excited to talk to him. And so now here he is.
Hi, Daniel. This is Cecily.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Can you hear me okay as well?
I was having trouble with my phone the last couple of days about the microphone not working properly. So I'm hoping that it's fine. If you can hear me now, it should be all right.
Yep. You are coming in loud and clear. So yay.
Okay. Oh my God, I'm so glad we got to do this.
Seriously?
It took so long to nail down, but we made it.
I know. And also, like, the last couple of weeks, I know you've been busy, because I know you always work a lot of jobs, and I've had a lot of stuff going on as well, and it's a holiday season. And then I wanted to chat last Sunday, but I was actually in Maryland for my brother's wedding. So it was a little bit hard to do
that. Oh, that makes sense then, why you wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I was kind of like, I was, at the time we probably would have chatted. Yeah, I was at my brother's wedding, and I was slightly tipsy because, you know, free wine and stuff. So, yeah.
Of course. Okay, so with Kate.
Yes.
I have never seen Castaway. I know nothing about it. As much as I've looked it up, I never remember what it's about. I don't know. I know zero about how she got involved to write a song. So, like, for a movie. I don't know any backstory about Be Kind to My Mistakes. And I think, I was thinking about this before you called. I think talking about Pull Out the Pin at Length made me realize I think it surpassed Be Kind to My Mistakes. I think I would have to say Pull Out the Pin became solidly my number one Kate song ever.
Really?
Yeah, I think realizing how much I loved it and how much I talked about it, and when I listened back to what I was saying about it, I thought this was a bigger foundation for me than Be Kind to My Mistakes was, and I think it surpassed it. I think Pull Out the Pin is now my favorite after talking about it.
Mm-hmm. But, and now I'm curious, especially because when I heard you on I guess it would have been Tour All Night, or it was the other offshoot show of the Rival Night.
Yeah.
Okay. What it was Tour All Night. Cause I remember you were, they talked with you after, one of the West Coast shows for Tori, and you had said, oh yeah, that this was your favorite song. So I'm curious, like, even though it's no longer your absolute favorite, what did make it your favorite for a long time? Cause I've got my own personal connection to the song, but I'm curious, like, for you, how, like, what made it an absolute favorite?
It doesn't sound like anything in her discography. It doesn't match. Like, if you just played it, you might guess that it's after Hounds of Love, but it could be before. But it also doesn't sound like anything on either album. It's the poppiest thing she's ever written, that's for sure. Part of it was because of its uniqueness, but also just, like, it's a straight pop song with Kate. Because I remember I talked about, like, the ninth wave, that I can't listen to songs out of the ninth wave. If I want to listen to a song in the ninth wave, I just listen to the ninth wave. And most of her songs are like that. Like, I don't play them over and over. Be Kind to My Mistakes is the first song that I put on repeat, like, 5 and 6 times. Like, I just can't get enough of it. Like, I just am in love with that song. I always have been since I first heard it.
I've been in love with this song as well since the first time I heard it. For me, it was listening to it on the Aspects of the Sensual World EP. That was how I first heard it. I was in college, so
how did you get that? We should do that.
So okay,
we
so
need to tell the story on there.
Okay, so the way I heard
how did you get that?
So the way I heard Aspects of the Sensual World is that in mid-2000s, I was going to Old Dominion University. And it's in this area in southeastern Virginia. And I was a radio DJ for WODU. So that was the college radio station. And at that time, I don't think it's that way anymore because they have changed the building that the radio station is in. They've changed it a lot since I graduated in 2007. I feel very old. But when they used to have these bins of music, and they all had stickers on them saying, like, the number for, like, recommended tracks, number 3, number 7, or RIYL, recommended if you like, and then the name of, like, a sound-alike band or something. So within those bins, then at this point, I knew kind of who Kate was, but I wasn't super into her music. She was somebody who was played a lot on Flashback Alternatives, and I just knew about, like, I knew her name, and I was starting to get more into female singer-songwriters. I was discovering Tori at about the same time as well. Mm-hmm. And in the bins, there was some Tori music. That's actually where I, quote-unquote, borrowed a copy of from the Choir Girl Hotel, because that was in there. And then there was a copy of Aspects of the Sensual World in the bins. It was all kind of beat up. It looked like it, like the CD had been played quite a bit, and the jewel case was all scratched. But I went, oh yeah, this is that Kate Bush chick. They keep playing on Flashback Alternatives. And so I, you know, quote unquote, borrowed it. And that's where I heard Be Kind to My Mistakes, because it was released on that. Now, I know it was released before Aspects of the Sensual World. So I was actually kind of trying to decide to myself, where would I put this song? Because I associate it with Sensual World because of it being on Aspects of the Sensual World that came out in 1989. Mm-hmm. But this was from a 1986 movie and was released on the soundtrack in 1987. So 2 years before the Sensual World album came out. So I'm putting it in with Hounds of Love. And also the song was re-released on an expanded version of Hounds of Love in 1997 that included this as a bonus track. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to put it in there with Hounds of Love because it's in that area of like between when she put out the album, there was also Experiment 4 and she was doing stuff with, she was doing Don't Give Up with Peter Gabriel and doing the song with Big mm-hmm. Country, The Seer, which, oh my God, I can't wait to talk about The Seer because I fucking love that song. And I think the structure of this song is really interesting because it sounds like it's kind of repetitive, but it's not. Like there are no other than that. This it is this that brings us together. That's the only part that really repeats in the song. Like the chord structure of it, it changes and shifts all over the place as most of her songs do. But it is very upbeat. It is so 80s. That guitar is so 80s. Oh my God.
Oh my God, isn't it? It's in 80s.
But I love it. It's got that like mid 80s sound. I love that mid 80s sound. Like some people go, oh my God, that's dated. Shut up, people. I like it. But now that's kind of like, I've loved this song. I like how poppy it is. And I don't feel like you have to know the context of the song in order to understand it. It's just, oh, it sounds like a nice like song about people trying to understand each other. I mean, that's a kind of a common theme with Kate. But if you know.
Very much. But it's funny that you said that you heard this on Aspects of the Sensual World, because I've never even seen Aspects of the Sensual World. I've never seen that in a collectible. Like I've never held it. I knew it was out there, but I've never talked to anyone that had it or have seen it.
Yeah, to be honest, I wish that I had snagged that album and kept it, because about 2 years after I had my show at WODU, they cleared out everything from those bins. And I wish to God that I had kept it.
What a waste.
Yeah, seriously.
There must have been some gems in there.
Oh, I know there were. There were like all sorts of promo CDs and everything that like I loved. Sometimes just building a radio show, I had like my couple like 12 whatever songs, and then I would just pull random stuff from the bins. Like, I have no idea what this is. I'm just going to play it because it looks like it hasn't been played since 1983. So there you go.
Yeah, so
they even had
there's
records.
Someone out there that needs to hear this right now. That would be a great idea for a radio show of like obscure music to show just the bin.
I would do that with my radio show. Like sometimes I would just go like, okay, like I would come in right before my show and then just pull stuff out of the bins. Like, okay, we're just going to play these random things here. I did that once just to have fun. And it was like the weirdest kind of show because I would end up picking stuff that was like, okay, this is not my thing at all, but it was fun. And that's why I got to help this, and you know, going through those bins, it helped me further discover Kate and Tori, because I borrowed their very well-worn promo copy of From the Choir Girl Hotel.
I didn't hear this song until, so I got into Kate in 92, at fall of 92.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't hear this song until probably like 2000, I think. I think it was a song that I downloaded. God, I want to say it was even Napster still. I think I found someone had it and it took me a really long time to download it. And then I finally heard it and I was like, I don't get it. Like, I need a story on this song. Like, where is this from?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's definitely the Fairlight, but it doesn't have the same qualities as like, could you put it on Hounds of Love? Like, does it really fit?
It really
doesn't.
It kind of to me, and I was listening to it today, like on repeat as I was finishing up my notes, that to me, it sounds like kind of like a cross between Experiment 4, because it's got like that kind of like with the guitar and everything, it kind of has that sound, but crossed with maybe a little bit of Big Sky in terms of the exuberance and the vocals. It's not as over the top as the Big Sky is. You don't have that, like, even though she's doing stuff at the end, you know, low, low, low,
right.
But it's not, she's not like screaming at the top of her lungs, like at the end of the Big Sky as everything's fading out. But it has that kind of poppy exuberance to it.
I think if I could say like what song, what Kate song is related to, like musically related to Be Kind to My Mistake, I think I would say Burning Bridge.
Interesting.
Burning Bridge, they seem like they come from the same place, but neither of them sound like anything else. They sound like each other, but I don't think they sound like anything else.
Biggest difference though between this one and Burning Bridge for me though is that Burning Bridge, the lyrics don't have a lot of weight to them. They're not, I mean, they're
that's
good,
true, yeah.
But they're not deep. And even she said as such when I talked about it in the episode that she wrote it as a B-side. She's like, yeah, whatever. It's just like a whatever, like lyrics don't matter. But this one, like, you can dig a little. There's a little bit more meat to this.
Films presents the new film from acclaimed director Nicholas Roeg. Gerald Kingsland and Lucy Irvine, total strangers until she answered his ad.
Mr. Kingsland?
And made an extraordinary commitment.
Now make sure that we don't starve, Lucy.
To spend a year together, alone, in an island paradise.
Lucy!
Welcome to Chewing. They came to build their own world.
I believe in our future here, together.
What they discovered,
come on, love,
would be a greater challenge than either of them expected.
Hey, Luz! Come on down! I promise you, I need you to dance, or no?
Gerald, oh. We need shelter! We need food!
What is that, eh? What is that?
Your anger. God, it frightens me. I mean, we're here on this island alone.
Nothing's changed here.
Nothing's changed except you.
You changed!
Nicholas Roeg film based on the international bestseller Castaway, a true story of survival and self-discovery.
I've seen Castaway. I watched it sometime last year.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I watched it last year. It was on YouTube somewhere because it's hard to find.
I think we had this conversation another time because didn't you look through the music credits and it had been people that had worked with Kate?
No, that was Lady Hawk.
Oh, Lady Hawk. Okay. I thought it was.
Yeah.
This. Okay. Sorry.
But there was like, when I watched Lady Hawk, I saw like Andrew Powell and a couple other names like, hey, wait a minute. Andrew Powell. Hey. Producer.
Kicking Sun.
Man. Kicking Sun. Lionheart and all that. So this was from a movie. This was written for a 1986 movie called Castaway. It starred Amanda Donahoe and Oliver Reed. It was directed by Nicholas Roeg and was adapted from a book from 1984 of the same name by Lucy Irvine, telling of her experiences of staying for a year with writer Gerald Kingsland on the isolated island of Tuin, which is located between New Guinea and Australia. So this song plays over the beginning credits. And over the beginning credits, you see this guy writing a personal ad, basically. He takes out an ad in a paper and saying that he wants to find somebody to stay on a desert island, on a deserted island with, just because he feels like doing it. And this young woman, Lucy Irvine, responds to this advertisement. They become self-imposed castaways for a year on the isolated and uninhabited island of Tuin in the Torres Strait between New Guinea and Australia. She was chosen by this writer from over 50 applicants. Irvine agreed to marry him to satisfy immigration restrictions before they traveled to Tuin. She was 25. Kingsland was 49. After a year, they returned home. And in 1983, she published her account of the experience in Castaway, which was later used as the basis for the film. And in 2011, Amanda Donahoe, who's the actress who played Lucy Irvine in the movie, recalled her experience working with Oliver Reed that, quote, "Well, naked on a desert island with Oliver Reed, it was a tabloid fantasy, wasn't it? He was an alcoholic and his behavior was erratic, but he was always a courteous and good actor. His personal life wasn't working, but he never crossed any lines professionally." He was an English actor born February 13th, 1938, died May 2nd, 1999. An English actor known for his upper middle class macho image and Hellraiser lifestyle. So he played Bill Sykes in the movie Oliver. Many other movies here. He played Athos in The Three Musketeers. He was in The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, which is a really surreal movie. Oh, my God. And he was also very in much. Gladiator in Ridley Scott's Gladiator. He played Antonius Proximo, the old gruff trainer. And so, yeah, the movie opens with the guy writing his advertisement saying he's looking for somebody to spend a year with on a desert island, and her song is playing over that. It's a slightly different version than what got released on Aspects of the Sensual World. The intro is a little bit longer, but otherwise, like, it's not too much different. It's definitely her. But she just provides that song, and then the rest of the soundtrack is instrumental, and Stanley Myers was the composer for the rest of the song. So she just did the opening song. As far as how she came to do it, she actually hasn't really talked very much about it. She did say in an interview in 1990, this is from Option, she says, this is in reference to this song and then this woman's work for She's Having a Baby that I'll get to talk about next season, that, quote, "In both cases, the films were finished and they specifically wanted me to write a song for those parts of the movies. I love working with film and admire their work a lot. I was really thrilled to be asked to do that." So she, I guess, because she was chopping the charts at the time, so they probably, hey, let's ask her to write a song for this movie. And, well, we all know that Kate loves movies.
Yeah, I the first exposure I had to Kate was through She's Having a Baby.
Mm.
I didn't know who she was. I didn't know the song when that came. It's a part of a very dramatic part of the movie. And when it started, I remember sitting in the theater thinking to myself, this is a really pretty song, but I don't know why that lady sounds that way.
Uh-huh.
Like, not having any idea that maybe 4 years later I'd be one of her biggest fans, like, you know, like I'd be so into her music, but it just was something I heard. And then, oh yeah, I remember that song at the end. I don't really remember any details about it. There was that song at the end. That's as far as with her. It's a fitting that she's associated with movies because we've talked about the cinematic nature of her music. So she can do that really well. She hits the point that she needs to really well. And I hadn't heard the plot line of the movie until you just read it. And now thinking of the lyrics, because I never have associated the lyrics with the movie, she really got into it. It made so much sense now that that's why the lyrics would be that according to the story. I think, though, the lyrics stand alone. I don't think they need anything else. Like, she made a complete story, I think, for, you know, for what she was doing. I love the poppiness of it. I love how 80s it sounds.
Me too. Oh,
because a lot of her music, I think it's, you know, I think the early music, you could say, you can definitely tell it's from the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
This song, you can definitely tell it's from the 80s. Other music that she's written, you can't really place a time on. But this is one that you can.
Love, love. It's all right, darling. We can do this together. It's all right, darling. I can't think of nothing better.
I think what fascinates me about this song is that it continues Kate's trend of doing songs from a male point of view. Like, I cannot think of many, if any, other female artists who are willing to write from so many different perspectives, including opposite gender perspectives. That's mm-hmm. not something that you really see a lot of. Like, whether, like, men trying to write from a female perspective or women trying to do the same. Like, you don't really see that. And even though out of the context of the movie, like, it, the narrator could just be, it doesn't have to be male or female. But if you like realize that it's from Oliver Reed's character's point of view, then you're like, oh, wait, she's writing something from his point of view. She's a woman, but she's putting herself in the place of a man. And it's just, it's really yeah. interesting. And she's made the guy very vulnerable yeah. where like the title, you know, Be Kind to My Mistakes, is what he says to her in the movie when she tells him that, when Lucy says that she's going to write a memoir about her experience being on this island with him. And he says to her, be kind to my mistakes.
Wow, that's wonderful. What a wonderful story to go with that song. I feel like I'm rediscovering it.
Oh, I sort of like felt like I did when I started watching the movie. I'm like, okay, well, this kind of makes a little more sense. Okay. And the movie itself,
I mean,
honestly,
it's
is only kind
though,
of
that she could do it because mm-hmm. what she did with Wuthering Heights.
And she is such inspired by film that, you know, I think that everybody kind of has this impression of Kate as being somebody who's very closed off from people. But no, she's like, she gets people like knocking on her door, going, hey, we got this movie. Hey, you want to contribute something to it? And she's like, okay, sure. Yeah, I love movies. Like, she's always so inspired by mm-hmm. movies. I mean, yeah, Wuthering Heights and Delius. Oh, Delius.
Oh, yeah. Or night. What is the Hounds of Love movie?
Oh,
Night of
Night of the Demon.
Night of the Demon. Yeah, that one did a huge influence. Or the documentary for both. Then, like even that medium.
Yeah, she's always so inspired by movies, and it just makes sense for her to have a song in a movie, even though the movie wasn't like a huge hit. It only made $483,460 at the box office in 1986. But it was a movie that people saw.
One of the interesting things about Be Kind to My Mistakes is that it kind of shows, what if she hadn't, and I'm going to botch the name, that trio, the Bulgarian trio that she worked
with. Oh, Trio Bulgarka.
Bulgarka. When she heard them, that I'm sure that's what shaped the Central World.
Yes.
I mean, she put them everywhere on that album and did a wonderful job with that. But Be Kind to My Mistakes, I think, is an example of her music might have gone that way had she not been influenced by them. And it's kind of like the discussion about, what if she hadn't met the Fairlight? Mm-hmm. What would her music sound in 1985 if she hadn't met, you know, been introduced to the Fairlight? And so it's kind of like a little capsule, like she could go this way or she could go this way. She went the Trio Bulgarka way. So it always makes me, I'm always a little hungry for more songs that sound like Be Kind to My Mistakes, because it's untouched yet by the, it was after Hounds of Love, and it might have been the next project. So I'm always like, gosh, what could have been, you know, because it's definitely the poppiest thing she's done. It's really up tempo. It just sounds like she could have really ended the 80s in a different way than what she did, like a really quiet, you know, she came in with Never Forever, which was like a lot of drums, a lot of like high vocals. And then she kind of ended it with a really sweet and, you know, sensual way to go out. So it's kind of like a time capsule, I guess.
It is true. Like, and I'll get into this one when I get into the sensual world, that at this kind of period, she mentions in interviews when the sensual world came out that she had been working on things, but she didn't quite feel like the big spark of inspiration was really there until she got a hold of the Trio Bulgarka, and then she went, oh, poof, wait, hey, I've got the album done now. Because, oh my gosh, I can write all these things for them to sing on and for them to help me with. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it is interesting you bring that up, because I do think that I agree with you that if she hadn't met the Trio Bulgarka, that her next album probably would have sounded a little bit like this.
Yeah, I think so. And there's a little bit of aspect, which I know you'll talk about, but on the Sensual World album, some of the songs have a poppier or like an up-tempo beat to them. Like, Sensual World doesn't sound like a lot of what she did previous.
No.
I think it stands out. I mean, we're not talking about that yet, but I think it stands out on its own as this does. So, mm-hmm. I mean, maybe its influence is there. It's just not that apparent. When you were talking about how she's able to write from a male perspective, or even like Claude Rossing, like a young child, like whether it's boy or girl, like when you can get to a child and have that level of imagination, like in Cloud Busting, like that takes something really special. Because she's a storyteller and because she wants to talk from the perspective of a character, I don't know that she thinks of presenting gender in the way that most songwriters do.
Mm.
I think she really takes it as a character. I don't think she takes it personally. So like, she's very sensual. She's very much a woman. She's very, you know, feminine at times. And like, she's comfortable that way. She's comfortable in her skin. So that when she goes and she's like, okay, I have, this is a male character and we're going to talk about a wife. I can do that because I understand the character. And it's kind of like she might go into it as an actor, which really changes the way that she presents the story, because it's not influenced by her own feelings. It's influenced by the character's feelings.
Yeah.
And I think that takes a lot of strength of character and identity and knowing who you are, that you're not bothered by. I don't think many artists have done that. The one that comes to mind immediately would be Prince. I think he was able to write from both sides of female or male, even in a sexual way. Like, even talking about sexuality, he could do that and present it, you know, without getting in the way of it. And she's probably the female part of that I can think of. But not many people can do that. It's always about this man hurt me, or this woman left me, that devil woman. Like, it's always so adversarial, but it's not from the perspective of the person. It's a part, you know, it's still like outside looking in. Maybe what also helps her be successful in that is that she's always, very few times that she's talked about really, like really early in her career, where she was forced to do different ads and pictures. You know, there was that tiny part where the record company was like, you need to be a sex symbol and we're going to make you, you know, do these photo shoots, and something that she never did again. She always did it on her own terms. And I think she didn't have any kind of, she didn't buy into anything like, I can't sing from a male perspective because then it'll affect how people see me as a female. She didn't have that, because she always did sexuality on her own terms.
Mm-hmm.
She always did her image on her own terms. Without, you know, with that little exception. So when she would go in it, it's like, I'm Kate Bush. Like, I'm going to sing from this character, and people know this is a character. It's just a song that I'm singing. It's just a story that I'm presenting. So my image nothing is taken away from my image or my personality because I'm singing from a male perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Or even that I'm dressed as a boy. That always kills me. Like, can you imagine, like, when Cloud Busting was new, and the video came out, and they're like, have you seen the video? Yeah, she plays the little boy. Mm-hmm. What? Like, yeah. It still would be unusual. You know, Annie Lennox, maybe. She's probably, and Eurythmics, she might be another example of being able to write. I don't know her career as well, but I imagine that she would be a person that could probably write from both perspectives, you know, a perspective of different genders.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's presented that. Like, you know, I remember watching Who's That Girl? I remember seeing that video from when it was premiered, and like she's dressed as a man, and I was like, oh my god, this is amazingly cool. Like, you know, Boy George was out at the time, and then she did that, and I was just blown away, just as I am by Kate, of what she can come up with characters and in her songs.
I don't know
that's just that part of this song always fascinates me, is just that if you know the context of the movie that she wrote this for, you know, it makes it a little bit richer, but otherwise, like, this feels like some of the themes that she would eventually write about on the sensual world, especially like connections between people and trying to understand each other. I mean, she's always written about those things. I mean, come on, like, running up that hill, everyone. But taken out of the context of the movie, if you look just at the lyrics, it's about that, like, you're trying to forge a connection with somebody and you know, realizing that each person has their own darknesses. You know, some secrets are too dark to let out, to let go of, to let go, to hold on to. You know, yeah, because I mean, it starts with, you know, it is this that brings us together, which I love the way she sings that part. You know, it is
that
brings us together. It is a tricky line to sing because she's like, you know, dee, 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 dee. I love the way she sings it though. Like, she just like drags that part. It is this that brings us together.
And after that part, there's that kind of harmony that comes in, that's under the music,
mm-hmm.
like that, that part. I always thought, when I was kind of piecing her timeline together and learning her songs and everything, I thought, wouldn't that be interesting if the trio Bulgarica had done that?
Oh, yes. I think
like
it would've
been. They had done the backup, like that would take the song to another level. I mean, and of course, we always have to throw in if Kate had toured more, and she had been able to do a tour with the trio, and put them on other songs that they weren't originally on. That song is begging for them,
mm-hmm.
and it's crazy because it was years before she would meet them. But it's always like this is coming, and like it's a weird thing. Like she was saying, they were coming before she even met them, mm-hmm. because they would fit perfectly on that song. I think behind my mind, no, I think I know that has some of the, that might be one of her top five vocal arrangements of Behind My Mistakes, how everything flows together and how she harmonizes with herself,
yeah,
and the way she sings the lyrics and everything. Oh my gosh. She did a phenomenal job to arrange those vocals. And that part of the opening that you were talking about, that might be, I think that's my favorite part of the song, the way that it opens.
Mm-hmm.
It's really strong and yeah. Just like beautiful. Oh, it's very Kate, very Kate.
Yeah, I like this. It's all right, darling. We can do this together. It's all right, darling. I can think of nothing better. Like that feels very much like some of the themes to come for the sensual world, like something like Love and Anger and some of these other songs about like, hey, we're trying to overcome things and we can't do it alone. We need to do this with the two of us. Just the two of us. It's all right, darling. We can do this together. It's all right, darling. I can think of nothing better. But then, like, in the context of the movie, like, I don't know you and you don't know me. Because the Oliver Reed character and Lucy Irvine, they didn't know each other. They were just strangers. She just like, oh, okay, this guy's asking to be on a desert island. Okay, sure, I'll apply. They didn't even know each other. Yeah, they're just on this island together. And they're going to, well, and they do end up discovering each other in more ways than one. Yeah. There's lots of nudity in the movie. Not that I mind very much. I mean, it's nudity, whatever. I don't know. You know, I don't know what I want, but my heart is needing. It feels like in the movie, in the context of the movie, that's he, to me at least, the writer, he's like, I don't know exactly what I'm looking for, but I know I just want this experience. I just need to go do something. But then if you out of the context, it's like, no, I it could just be a general relationship thing.
Yeah, I always took it as like she was writing from, I met you and we're dating, but this is like, it's not serious yet, but like, remember, like, tread lightly. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to rush into anything. Like, just give me some space. I'll give you space. Like, you know, it didn't seem like a fantasy. Like, so much of her music is an escape. So much of her stories are escapist.
Yeah.
But this is one that's really based in reality. Like, people, everyone has experienced that. Where, like, something is, you know, you want to be cautious or you want to take things slowly. And it's like, okay, be kind to my mistakes. Like, mm-hmm. Hang on. Like, let's give ourselves some time to figure out and, like, not be offended at each other. And just, you know, work things out and get to know each other. I don't know what you are looking for in me. I don't know what I want, but my heart is needing.
And if you're allowing the other person to, you're being vulnerable. You're like, you're admitting to this other person that you might potentially have feelings for that, hey, I'm probably going to screw up a little bit. Just don't hate me, please.
I've always thought her music has yearning. Like, it's always yearning for something and, you know, kind of looking for what was lost. But I think an equal aspect to her music is vulnerability.
Yeah.
And vulnerability is a really difficult thing to get out of a songwriter. Like you were talking about, especially typically male songwriters, they have a hard time being vulnerable.
Yes.
In lyrics. And you don't hear it very often. And a lot of times, unfortunately, when women do it, it's like, oh, that's a sappy love song. Or it's like, you know, you're pining or something. Like, it's not taken as seriously as it should be. But with her, like, this is a very vulnerable song. And I never thought of it that way. But it's difficult to say, give me space.
Mm-hmm.
That puts you in a very difficult situation because, at least it can feel that way, because the person could say no.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I don't want to do that. Like, you're putting yourself up for rejection. You're putting yourself for someone to say, I'm good. I don't want to. Or, like, you can be vulnerable, but I'm not going to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you may not get it back. And that's, like, this song is really about that, like, are you meeting me here? Like, yeah. Are we both on the same page? Because we're in this together. So we both have to agree, like, you know, we're going to be kind to each other.
Yeah, I was listening to this today and I've listened to this song so much. At one point, this was one of my most played songs, actually, in my iTunes library, like way back, like 5 iPods ago or something like that. Back when iPods were
a thing. Yeah, I'm sure I could say the same thing.
Yeah. Like this was up there. And I never, until I really started digging into it, the song for this show, I never really, really thought about the lyrics too much. But just listening to it a little bit more, prepping for this show, I can't say that Be Kind to My Mistakes is a top 10, but it is definitely a song that has grown with me a lot. It's something that, you know, you were talking about with vulnerability. Yeah, a lot of, I think that the idea with a lot of songwriters, and like based on some of the songwriter classes that I've been to, that they want you to have like a strong protagonist because you want the listener to feel good. You want them to feel empowered. You don't want them to feel down or sad in some way, because otherwise they're going to change the station. But I like it when songwriters are more vulnerable in a song like Be Kind to My Mistakes. And you're right, it doesn't happen very often. It really doesn't.
No.
And it is hard to get that out of people. And like you say, especially with male songwriters. I can tell you, like from the songwriter groups that I'm a part of, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, if a male writes about being vulnerable, it's covered in anger.
Yeah.
Or it's covered in being defensive. Like, you made me feel vulnerable, now I hate you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what that turns into. So we don't actually talk about a space that is about being vulnerable, like remaining vulnerable and asking and like dealing with something at that space.
Yeah. That's just not something that, or if there is a song where a guy is being a little bit more vulnerable, they're like, people go, oh, well, that's all sappy. It's this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. It's dismissed. Like, it's dismissed as something less than, and it's like, this is a great conversation. Like,
exactly.
Why aren't we talking about this more? We wouldn't feel so vulnerable if we all talked about how vulnerable we felt. Like, you know, this should be in a song. This is what songs are for, like shared experiences. Like, it's wonderful to hear that back.
I think probably my favorite part of the song is, speaking of the vulnerability part, that We'll find all we're meant to find in your life and my life. There are secrets too dark to let out, to let go of, to get over, which took me a while to really understand. But the older I've gotten, like this whole era with this song and then The Central World to Come, that era of her music, I never super, super connected with until I hit about my 30s. And I'll get to talk about this with a lot of those Central World songs, that a lot of them I did not really, really understand until I became older and, you know, having other relationships and like mm-hmm. how hard it can be to put yourself out there and admit to somebody that, hey, I'm probably going to screw up. Like, don't hate me.
And then I'll try not to hate you when you screw up.
Yeah. Like, hey, we got
to
work through this together.
To you and do the same thing I'm asking you to do. Like, that's another part. Like, you might be able to do it. And then it's like, well, you were supposed to be, when I said this and was being vulnerable, you were supposed to say it this way. And like, you can't do that. Like, they can fumble too. They can be like, I don't know how to respond to you. And I feel bad. And like, can we just talk about this? Because I don't know what I'm doing. And like, that's an okay space to be.
Mm-hmm.
You're allowed to not know what you're doing. Like, that's human. Yeah, I can relate to that, because I got into, I think as you did, we got into Kate in our, well, actually I was 19 when I got into Kate. So 20s were coming, but I very much look at a lot of the songs very differently now than I did when I first heard them when I was mm-hmm. 20 or 21. And that's the mark of a great songwriter, is when songs still make sense to you and you find different aspects of them. And this is certainly a song that even as time goes on, it gets better, because it's so real. Like, it's just expressive of something that everyone has felt at times. So now where would you put, like, would you put top 20? Would Be Kind to Your Mistakes be top 20? Or would it not be in there?
I would say top 20. I would put this in my top 20. It's not in the top 10, but it is definitely in the top 20. And I will say that I used to have the song Strange Phenomena actually in my top 20, but that has been replaced with this song. Because even though, yes, I did mention earlier that I play this song a lot and I've loved it. Well, I love a lot of her songs, as you guys know.
Right, hence the podcast.
Yeah, but this is definitely in the top 20. It's in the top 20. It really is. I like how upbeat it is, but there's so much meat to the lyrics. It's a good way of showing what's to come with a little bit with the sensual world and some of its themes of connection and trying to overcome whatever crap life might throw your way mm-hmm. with somebody else, realizing you can't do it alone.
You know, we had talked about at length, like how Kate kind of avoids personal stuff and she just stays within characters and stories. I don't know what was going on in her life. I know she had a long-term relationship with Del, and it was a very long time that she was with him.
Yes.
I don't know what was happening in her life, but it feels like maybe she took this from her relationship with Del, that they had to do this, and kind of recalling back, like, there's been moments when we've had to have this conversation of, like, I feel like you screwed up or I did, and we have to iron this out. Because there's something about this song that feels that it's from a personal perspective also. It feels like more than just the character is feeling what she wrote. Just like the songs later to come, there would be a couple of times where she talks about real life happening. And this is maybe the beginning of, I don't know why I get that feeling, but I feel like this song is, it drew on something personal for her. Let's just say that. That's what it feels like.
It could have, or it could have been something that a friend was going through, perhaps.
Yeah, it just seems like it was informed by her, like something that happened in her life somehow.
I could see that.
Someone did something. Yeah, it just feels that way. To the point we are now talking about her discography, I don't know how many personal moments you can see, like, oh, that was. I think Sat in Your Lap stands out as talking about anxiety and frustration. I think that was from her personal life of being frustrated with songwriting. But there's not many places, I think, that feel like it's from, not from a character's point of view.
And usually we've talked about this before, that Kate is not a, like, bleed her heart all over the piano, like, kind mm-hmm. of artist. She's really not. Really, the most personal, I think, that she ever really gets is to come on The Red Shoes. Because that album feels a lot more personal and dealing with, like You're the One. I'm sorry. That is totally, like, her dealing with her breakup with Del, probably. Or Moments of Pleasure that has all of her friends who have died, or people that she used to love who are just not in her life anymore, or right. Later Among Angels is about her dad. But then, you know, there really aren't very many, like, songs where you can say, oh, yes, this was definitely something from her private life. Like, she's like, nope, right. Put up the wall.
I'm happy that's coming. It's such a change, like, you know, this song feels like it's leaving a space, it's leaving an era, because the Central World certainly starts a different story.
Yes, it does.
It's a different trajectory, you know, and we're leaving, like, a big basis of what she did, you know. I'm happy we have and things after this, but when you really refer to classic Kate Bush music, that's what we've already talked about. Like, she has, if her career had ended after Hounds of Love, she would have still been as influential and mm-hmm. she would have still accomplished so much in her career from having even just a 7 or 8 year old career. Like, talking to the music up to this point, it's been an absolute pleasure to see that. So this is just kind of saying goodbye to that and having a different sound, like introducing us to a different sound. It's funny that it's like that, because it's one of, I don't mean it in a mean way, but it's one of her most dated songs. There is no question that it was mm-hmm. written in the mid 80s. There is absolutely no question. Like, you mentioned the guitar. all of the synth work, like, it is 80s.
This comes
80s.
With hairspray, you know? Hairspray all over all the Aquanet.
Yeah, they should have
the
included,
world.
They should have done a promo single with a can of hairspray
yes.
with it.
Oh
like
my
a free
God.
Gift. Like, that would be so perfect as, like, you need this song with this hairspray. Like, that's perfect. I've enjoyed all the podcasts we've done together, but I really wanted to talk to you about this song because I always associate this song with you and I meeting.
Really?
Because you, yes, because you said, I remember you heard Tour All Night, which is like the sister podcast for Drive All Night for Tori, that Ephron and I think David do.
Yep, Ephron and David.
And they were interviewing people after every show. And they interviewed me after the Seattle show. And I don't remember how exactly we got onto Kate Bush, but I remember Ephron asked me what were some of the songs I'd like to see Tori cover. And I kind of said, like, he caught me off guard and I kind of came up with a few songs. And then he said, my favorite song is Be Kind to My Mistakes. And I said, God, that's a fantastic
yes.
song. I love Be Kind to My Mistakes. But I would never think of Tori covering it. It wasn't an answer I would have given. And then I think two days later, maybe, I think you tweeted me or like messaged
yes,
me.
Yes, I did.
You're like, I do a podcast for Kate Bush. And I heard you on Tour All Night. And I was like, oh my God, someone's doing a Kate Bush podcast. This is fantastic. And then when we started corresponding, I gave you a list of songs that I really wanted to talk about, and this is one of them. And so I mean, you were hearing the whole thing, but I always think, like, if someone hadn't mentioned Be Kind to My Mistakes, maybe she wouldn't have contacted me and we wouldn't have been able to talk. But I always associate that song with our talking.
Aww.
So it's like our song that we share.
Oh my God,
and we both
song.
Love it so much. So
my God, yes.
This is kind of like our song. Yeah, so I'm so happy that we got to talk about it.
I was just listening to the show. I think I was probably playing a video game or something when I had that episode going, and I heard like the words Kate Bush, and I'm like, oh wait, let me pause the game. What are they saying about Kate?
What are you talking about?
wait, and then you say Be Kind to My Mistakes, I'm going, oh my God, that is a deep cut. He must be a fan.
Yeah, I was so excited when you contacted me, and I started listening to your podcast right away. And I was like, yeah, we should talk. And then we talked several times, you know, on the podcast and otherwise. Like, we share so much music in common. And I thought, yeah, this we have to talk about My Mistakes. Absolutely, because I associate that with us. And not everyone... You know, I'm curious to know how many people really dig this song. You know, do people know it? Do they put it in top 20? You know, it's in my top 5, I think. But is this a song that pops out for them?
I don't know.
Because I don't hear it mentioned. Like, you know, rightfully so, but Hounds of Love gets most of the attention. Like, it's always the ones that... Hounds of Love is always the album that people are going to know. If they're going to know any Kate music, even if it's a little bit, it's probably from Hounds of Love. I think some of the big fans, like, they might... I hear a lot of the big fans go to The Dreaming, which I absolutely...
Oh, yes.
Do. Absolutely my favorite Kate album. But I never hear people talk about Be Kind to My Mistakes.
You know, I never do either. And I wonder if some of that is because it... I mean, it actually was released in several different places, which I find the release history of this thing interesting because it first appeared on the soundtrack for the album... for the movie Castaway, and They put out a promotional 7-inch single that featured this song and Chemistry by Brian Eno. Apparently it was only released in Germany. And then they further remixed the track for as a B-side for This Woman's Work and on Aspects of the Sensual World, which was an American-only release. And there's actually three different versions of this song. There's the original version, which was released on the soundtrack. There's a version that was put out on that 7-inch promotional single, and then a remix version released on the B-side of This Woman's Work in 1989. The original version of Be Kind to My Mistakes has a longer intro than the 1989 remix and has a slightly different ending with more echo on the percussion. The version on the promotional 7-inch single fades out while the album version on the soundtrack crossfades into track 2 of the album. This is actually from the Hounds or the Love Hounds list here when they were talking about the song. Note, not clearly reflected in this section is the fact that the version of Be Kind to My Mistakes on the USA CD EP Aspects of the Sensual World and on the This Woman's Work box set is severely edited and not the same version as on the Castaway soundtrack. Any Kate fan who happens across a Castaway soundtrack in any form, LP or cassette, is highly urged to pick it up no matter what kind of shape it's in. It's the only way you'll be able to hear this glorious song in its entirety. And I have searched long and hard for this soundtrack, and I have yet to find it. It's not even on YouTube. Even though, like,
yeah,
some fans have, like, edited.
That would be, like...
That would be, oh my God.
That would be, like, a needle in a haystack. I mean, I've never heard of anyone seeing it or touching it.
Me neither.
Like, I've never heard a story of, like, oh, I have the Castaway soundtrack. Look, it's on cassette. Like, I've never heard anyone that has.
Even in all my years of going to pawn shops,
exactly,
I have never,
record
ever
shows,
seen
like
this.
All of it. What was I think it was included in, what was that box set that it was of CDs? Wasn't it called This Woman's Work?
Yeah, it was This Woman's
it
Work
all
box
of the,
set. Mm-hmm.
It had all the albums up to that point.
Yep.
I think up to Hounds of Love, and then it had all the B-sides, and I think Be Kind to My Mistakes was included in that.
It was.
So that
must
be the version that everyone hears.
It was included on that as well. It was on one of the two CDs of rarities that had, like, Burning Bridge, My Leg in Love, and all the other B-sides and other non-album tracks. I think it was on the second CD. And also this was on the Other Sides. So the other box set released a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
I always do, too, because honestly, yeah. I didn't, as much as a big Kate fan I am, I didn't get that box set because I already have all her albums and other rarity things, you know? I don't, but because I've got some of the original, like I've got my Pounds of Love CD that's all nice and thick if you look at the sides, but I've already got it. Mm-hmm. I don't need to get it again.
Yeah, not in a different thing, just to pay for having it in different packaging. That doesn't make any sense.
No.
Yeah, it's the music that's important.
Yeah, I just found that interesting that, like, it's had these, like, different edits and everything, and... Well, if anybody has a copy of the one of the version from the Castaway soundtrack, feel free to email me. That would be awesome. Thank you. I can't find it.
The perks of being on a podcast, right? Just put that call out there.
A crowdsourcing here. Hey! If anyone has it. Oh, my God.
Help a girl out.
All right. Is there anything else we want to add about the song? I don't really think there's... I think we've talked a lot about the song.
I know. I'm surprised. It was like Waking the Witch. Like, I'm surprised that we got this much out of it. I didn't expect it to go... Because it's like a one-off thing. It's like a little pit stop. Like, that's what it feels like.
Yeah, because it is... It doesn't quite... I can't imagine this on Hounds of Love... Can't quite imagine this on Sensual World. It's like the in between. It's like it's like you were saying, it does feel, it feels like a transition. Like we're kind of going into something new. We got it coming up. Not quite sure what's coming up, but hey, hope you'll be along for the ride, man.
The song is pretty straightforward, so it's not like there's all this instrumentation to talk about.
No, there really isn't. I think the meat of the song is mostly in what we were talking about with the lyrics and the theme and just overall, like, vulnerable, somebody being, allowing them, somebody else to see them very vulnerable.
Yeah, I think the showcase of, you know, which is kind of a reverse of what normally happens with Kate's music. Normally when we talk about songs, we talk mostly about the music arrangements and what she's playing.
Mm-hmm.
But with this thing, I think it kind of flips, because really the highlight of the song are the lyrics. It's the lyrics are the highlights of the song. It's not music this time. So that's kind of makes the song unique also. Like when we were talking about Pull Out the Pin, there were music aspects that we couldn't even really talk about, because we're like, well, it says that there's this in it, but I don't really hear it. Or, you know, like a lot of the voices or like the vocal things were kind of all blended in. But here, maybe that's a way that is showing what's coming also, because on The Central World and Red Shoes, the lyrics get even deeper. It'll never be in a tour. She would never, like,
no.
She'd never include this. Yeah, I think we've talked about everything.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Look,
I can't think of anything we didn't cross. There's not really releases to talk about. Like,
no.
Or we already did that. You already said how it was released. Mm-hmm. There's no video.
No.
You already talked about the history of being in the movie. Like, yeah, I don't have anything else to add, I don't think.
Oh, me neither. I don't think so. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about Be Kind to My Mistakes. Another episode of The Can. Yes!
Yes, it's great. I know, moving forward. Have a great holiday. Have a great new year.
Yep, happy holidays.
I'll talk to you soon, and I'll be listening.
Yay! Happy holidays and happy new year to you as well. Yay!
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Strange Phenomena, the Music of Kate Bush. Well, we've gone into a pretty deep dive here, no pun intended, with this song this week for Be Kind to My Mistakes. And next week, we're going to be starting the collaborations part of the Hounds of Love season. There are going to be 3 episodes coming out. The next week is going to be talking about Do Bears with Rowan Atkinson, that was done for Comic Relief in early 1986. Then we're going to have an episode about The Seer, which was a song that Kate Bush did with the Scottish band Big Country. And then we get to wrap up the season with a beautiful, beautiful song where I get to talk with my husband, Andrew Link, the resident Peter Gabriel fan, about Don't Give Up. So that's what we're going to end on. So those are going to be the next 3 episodes coming out. I'm going to try and have it be a pretty regular weekly here. Hopefully I won't have to take off a week or so in between songs. And then the Central World album is going to start coming out in February of 2020. So lots of things to come. But first things first, if you enjoy what I'm doing and you'd like to contribute to the show and be a special subscriber, you can go to katebush.com. You can go to patreon.com/katebushpodcast. You can also call the hotline at any time, 757-349-6886. You can also email me, kbcast@linkmedia.com. You can find me on the web at kbcast.linkmedia.com and on Twitter at StrangeKateCast and on Facebook, facebook.com/KateBushPodcast. Whew, lots of different ways to find me. And I always love hearing from people going, oh yes, I remember this song. What about this song? And all that fun stuff.
And I'm going to be putting together very soon a Let the Weirdness In episode. So we're going to do a mailbag episode pretty soon. So if you'd like to contribute and all that with a phone call or an email or message or anything like that, feel free to do so at any of those spots. So I hope you all will join us next week, where we're going to start the collaborations portion of the Hounds of Love season. And we're going to be talking about Do Bears with Rowan Atkinson. See everybody then.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.